down there. But I saw what happened to Polly, so. So I took a few notes. And to summarize it all, I was a wretch and God saved me, and I'm doing a little better today. Thanks. My wife said lighten it up a little bit. So I tried taking notes, and it got a little overwhelming because my life is overwhelming. So I try to condense it, try to just get to highlights of things in my life and where I ended up. And my early years, I was introduced to Catholic Church. So I was raised in a Jewish Italian neighborhood, and everybody was Catholic. So from my earliest memories, I was taught all the things that go along with the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church was a very scary place for me. It was a huge place with stained glass, Jesus on a cross, the nails. It was just a very, very, as a child, it was a scary place for me. My teachers were nuns. They weren't the most pleasant people. We had to do confession every morning. It was just not a good place at that time. But so we got away from that, and you know, my parents, I come from alcoholic parents, which ended in divorce. There was adultery. There was, my mother hid a pregnancy from my father. I remember a baby leaving our house and come to find out years later that would be my half-sister. But they split and divorced, and I remember all the custody battles, how they fought for us all the time. And when my dad won, we were not happy. We wanted to be with my mom. But when my mom won, she shipped us off to stay with other people. It was very, very strange how my mom fought tooth and nail for us, but then would have us stay with other people, try to find other places. So I have had two other brothers, and my little brother and myself were raised pretty much together. My older brother was raised somewhere else, so I knew he was my brother, but didn't have that brother relationship. So that went on until my mother remarried and we ended up coming to Florida. So I was probably 12 or 13 years old. And there was a lot of other chaos, you know, in those other homes. I was forced to eat bread and water. My little brother had to stay in a doghouse. There was a lot of chaos. And that's why this was so overwhelming to go back through and try to get highlights. And there's a lot of stuff that I will leave out of my testimony. But so when we moved to Florida, I felt really out of place. I started junior high school. We moved to the beach, and I didn't feel like I fit in school. And I would skip school all the time and go hang out at the beach. There was a point where my mom and stepfather shipped us back off to our father in New York. We ran away a couple of times, and we ended up back. Because I was raised in that alcoholic atmosphere, alcohol was just a normal thing to me. I would make my mom drinks when I was 6, 7 years old, and that was just all normal to me. There was always booze in our house, and that just continued through my life. I remember one time when I was probably 13 or so, I had a craving for a beer, and I just drank a beer and dumped the rest out. I just had a craving for a beer, which was really strange at that age. But there was probably the pivotal moment was when I was grounded for something, and I wanted to go to a carnival. And because I was grounded, I couldn't go. So I went out to our porch, and my stepdad asked me where I was going, and I said I was going to go get my yo-yo, which really I snuck out of the house and I wanted to go to the carnival. So I was very rebellious at a young age. And when I came home at 1 o'clock in the morning or whatever it was, the doors were locked. And I was homeless from that point on. So that's when my homeless life began at the age of 13. I should have brought some water up here. And that's when I started. My stepfather accused me of doing drugs and drinking, and I didn't, you know, except for that one time, that beer. So that was when I started smoking pot. That's when I started smoking pot, drinking, hanging out. I would sleep in cars. I grew up in a trailer park on a beach, and so there was always cars parked there. And that was just my life for the longest time. At that young age, I never had a home. At some point, there would be friends that would let me stay with them, but I wouldn't go to school. I would skip school all the time, and I was just really rebellious. Once I started drinking and doing drugs, that became my main focus in life. And it kept a lot of the pain away, a lot of the things that I was feeling. And that was the time that, you know, I was introduced to God at a young age, and even at that period, and for years to come, I would curse God out. You know, why me, why me, why me? So, I remember being, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning on the beach, just asking God, why me, why me? I would sneak into the house, I'd steal money, just to, you know, have something to eat and hang out with my friends. I'd go buy them things. So, you know, I was rebellious, I was a thief, I was a bad little kid when I was young. Because I was on my own for so long and I had to survive, I didn't listen to anybody but myself. You know, I lived for myself, and that was it. And I would carry that into my adulthood. So I had no stability at that time. And I was 18, maybe even 17. It was before the drinking age went to 21. I think it was 19 at the time, but I knew I wasn't young enough. And I was 17, 18 years old, and I was hanging out in bars. I would spend the majority of my time in bars. Now, I would get a job here and there, but it was more important for me to be in a bar or be with the friends that I had that were partying than to hold a job. I could never hold a job, even if it was a dishwashing job. I cooked at a young age. The restaurant business was easy to get into. They were always hiring. So I was going into strip clubs when I was in Cocoa Beach when I wasn't even 19. And because I guess I looked a little older and I could pass for it. So I went through a phase where I was in these strip clubs. I was dating strippers. I was drinking. I wasn't really into drugs at that point, just a lot of drinking, a lot of irresponsibility. I got married for the first time when I was 19. She was 18. She just graduated high school. And we didn't plan on getting married. I remember talking to my mom, and we lied to her and said we were going to get married. We were going to move to Utah and get married out there. And at that time, you had to have blood tests. And my mom says, no, so my mom, we got married. We ended up married. And moved out to Utah, ended up in California. She got pregnant. We ended up back in Florida. We found a house in Satellite Beach. My mom helped us. I was still drinking. At that time in California, I was doing powder cocaine, and I wanted to be a cocaine dealer. And it was just, you know, I was trying to grow up, but it just wasn't happening. I thought things would change when she was pregnant, and I would have my son. But I would lose that son. So she went into labor prematurely. The baby was born, it was in ICU. I lived, I think, a day or two. So that was a really tough time. And at that time in my life is when I really, really went all out. I was introduced to crack cocaine. My drinking really escalated, and my drug use. I went to Orlando to pick up my baby. I brought him home. I carried him home in my arms to the funeral home. And at that young age, that was just a very traumatic thing. And we went years without him having a gravestone. So, and he does have that now, but we went years because I was given money to get that, but that money went to other things, went to my drinking and my drugs. So I was 21, and at 21, I've already gone through a lot of stuff. I did just a lot of drugs. I ended up divorced from her in 1986. And I would spend the next few years just bouncing from job to job, trying to get it together. But once crack cocaine was introduced to my life, I would drink every day, and that drug became my life. It caused so much pain, so much destruction, so much stuff in my life. In 1990, I met a girl in a bar, and I would ended up living with her, and I was on probation. At some point, I think it was prior to that, I think I had, I'm trying to remember, I had gone to prison for Grand Theft Auto. And back then, you only did a couple months. I had a five-year sentence. I did 7 months. But I met this girl. I lived with her for a little while. My drug abuse, my drugs, I was actually shooting cocaine then. It just got worse. And that was my first introduction to a treatment center. And went to treatment. Thought that, it was the first time I was clean in my early 20s. Since I was 12 years old, 13 years old, so it was a whole new thing to me. And it felt pretty good to be clean, to be sober. And I would meet my second wife. And I didn't know my second wife also had a drug addiction in her past. So we lived together for a while. We actually got married because I was arrested. And I tell Tony that she's my only real legal wife, because my other two, my first wife forged my name because I was out drinking and I never signed that license. And the second wife did the same because I was in jail. And the only reason we were getting married was because I could go to Texas on my probation with her. So Tony, we were the only ones that were there together, and both of us signed our license together. So it's kind of, I just don't think of those, even though we went through the whole thing with it. I met her at that rehab, not at that rehab, but through a job I had there. Transporting people. I would go to Brevard County Jail. I'd pick people up. I had to go through training, and I felt really good about my life at that time, to really do something that was positive and good. I was clean. I had somebody new in my life. I had a responsible job where I actually took over the company, and and I had a lot of responsibilities going for Form 51s, calls from the sheriff's department. But that was short-lived. There was a, you know, I'd have a walkie-talkie, I'd have a radio and stuff, and I ended up going and relapsing and buying drugs. And then I found out what her, how powerful her addiction was when we both started using together. My mom owned a restaurant at the time right down the road. It's Diamond 99 now. She used to have that restaurant years ago in the 90s. It was Rosie's Riverside. I would break into her restaurant after she closed and steal the money out of there to go and fuel my drug addiction, our drug addiction. So I was arrested several times for misdemeanors. I would never take care of responsibilities, never get my license. I would get caught on driving on suspended license and then get a warrant for that. And it was just on and on and on. It was just a never ending thing. I never had a license for years. I had 28 misdemeanors. In 1989, I got charged with a first-degree burglary with a battery that carries life in prison. And there was a couple other felonies that went along with it. And that was, it doesn't matter what it was, but that's what I was charged with. I ended up with probation, and I continually violated my probation because I didn't want to do what I was supposed to do. I wanted to do what I wanted to do. So one time I violated my probation, I had gone out to Texas and I was doing pretty well then. I remember standing before the judge and my lawyer says, he's not going to put you back on probation. Your points are too high, the state attorney. My wife at the time was in the audience out there and everybody thought I was going to prison. There were seven of us going before that judge. And one thing that I learned throughout the years was the gift of gab and to manipulate and do whatever I needed to do to get what I wanted. I was a master at it. I became a master. when you're living that life, I mean, when you have nothing and you have that drug addiction, my mom always told me I should go sell cars. I should be a car salesman. So I used that skill to talk to the judge, and there were seven of us, and six of them went to prison, and I was reinstated, and I went back home. 30 days later, I'd be back before him with three more felonies. And I couldn't say anything. All I could do was hang my head. That was it. I knew there was nothing I could say. And ultimately, I got a total of 52 years in prison, which came out, they were all concurrent, but it came out to 17 years. I had to go do a 17-year sentence with 5 years probation to follow. I was married at the time, and I knew that wouldn't last. as much as we try to lie to ourselves, I think, you're going away for 17 years. So I started that prison sentence in 1994. And in 1995, two of the things that I feared most, I was at a work camp, I had minimum custody, even though I had that much time, and I was called to the major's office, and my mother had got hit by a car, and she died, and it was right out here on US-1, not far from here, leaving the VFW. Excuse me, I got to back up a minute. The first one, 2 weeks prior to that, I was called to the major's office, and my little brother had been in a car accident. And he had killed himself and his fiance driving drunk and smashed into a tree in Jasper, Florida. So that was the first one, and I was supposed to go to that furlough, and it got messed up. I was supposed to go to his funeral. And 2 weeks later, my mom would get hit by a car. She just got his ashes. And then I believe that was in December 25th, January 31st, on the anniversary of my marriage with Debbie, I would have my divorce. So that was just a real trying time in my life. And there was no turning to God. You know, I was cursing God again. And that's just the way I did the rest of my time. You know, I finished that sentence, I got out. But there were times, now I have to say there were times throughout this where somebody would, and more times in prison, somebody would, I would cross my path that would try to talk to me about God, or they would have a Bible. And I would tell them that, look, the Bible was created to keep law and order at that time. You know, the Bible was for this or that. And if the Bible helps you, then that's great. You know, that's fine. But I wasn't there. I just was not there. I was still living my life. And you know, people don't realize, I talked to Dennis last Sunday, I believe it was, and told him about my last experience and how much drugs there were in prison. So even though I went to prison, my use didn't stop. It was still accessible. You know, it's easier to get there than it is on the street sometimes. So I went through that and got out on probation. I finished my sentence and worked for a steel company up there in Cocoa, and got hooked up with another girl that worked there. And it wasn't long. I was drinking then during my whole sentence and even towards the end. So it was only fitting that I continue what I was doing in prison. That didn't last long, you know. I ended up violating my probation, and before that judge, because the prosecutor wanted the judge to give me 22 years, and I said, geez, well, I have a bad time of not keeping my mouth shut when I should, and I wasn't real happy with the state attorney. And the judge at the time thought I said Jesus, and he said I cussed in his courtroom. He sent me back to the jail with no bond and for 90 days. And when I came back before him, he gave me 22 years, 12 in with 10 out. So I was off again with a 12-year sentence. I did 6 years on that. Again, pot was available. I mean, anything you can think of that's available on the streets, available in there. They make homemade booze. You can drink and do whatever you want. The only thing is that, you know, the consequences are that you might stay in prison a little bit longer if you get caught. So, you know, that was kind of a deterrent sometimes, and sometimes it wasn't. I did that sentence. I did 6 years on that sentence. So I've already wasted a lot of my time between the county jail, prison, a lot of time just not living the life, living a whole different life. The Brevard County Jail, my first experience with Brevard County Jail was the old jail in Titusville. That's when I started going, before Sharps was even built. And when Sharps was built, I was in that jail so many times that when that jail was built, I just happened to be in the Titusville old jail, and I was sent over there as a trustee to help open that jail. I retired a whole jail. Everybody that worked there was officers, and that went up through the ranks, sergeant, lieutenant, whatever, all retired because I went to jail again in my 50s, and it was all new people. You know, it was just, I just retired a whole jail, and here I am still in jail. And one thing I will share, every time I went to jail, they ask you what religion you are, and I would tell them a Christian. So I just thought about this not too long ago. If I was a Christian, probably wouldn't be sitting here in handcuffs in a booking room in jail. And I remember saying one time very pridefully, and they said, well, what's your religion? Born again Christian. And I said that very, with a lot of pride, handcuffed behind my back, sitting in a booking room, I'm a born again Christian. So I really pondered that after the fact. Anytime I was in jail, I wanted to bond out. It wasn't to bond out to do good. It was bond out to get back to my sin. I would do anything. In the early times, I would call my mom, please get me out. I only wanted to get out to get back to my sin. I didn't want to get out to do anything good. Didn't want to be in that jail because I couldn't do what I wanted to do or could be able to do out there, which was my drinking, my drugs, my partying, and just what I did. So I had a lot of suicide attempts. You know, there was times I would get so depressed and just so done with life, so done with everything. And those suicide attempts were more reaching out for help than anything else. Because if I really wanted to kill myself, I was killing myself slowly anyways. But I just wanted help. And I always looked for help in all the wrong places. You know, in hindsight, when I look back at my life. NA meetings, AA meetings. I would go to AA meetings and want to go drink after I was done, or while I was in it. I went to several treatments. I don't know how many treatments I went to, 7, 8, 9 treatment centers, but I would go to treatment not to get better, but because I made such a mess, I had to get away from it. I had to go hide somewhere. I lived in fear, guilt, shame. I just lived in it. So I would finish that prison sentence, and I would get out in 2006. There was a ministry that I wrote while in prison, and they accepted me. Went there when I got out. First week I got a job, lawn care, hard work, saved up, got a truck. That was short-lived because the ministry that I was involved with, and to this day, I'm still friends with the wife of the pastor, but she was a pastor too. So I didn't know at the time that was a red flag for that ministry. But it gave me a place to stay and to get on my feet, but ended up wanting out of there and started looking at dating sites and stuff, and I met a girl, and my wife knows all this, so so I met a girl in Titusville and met her, and she goes, well, why don't you come live with me? And that was after just one date. Packed up all my stuff, loaded in a truck, and went up there to Titusville. Said I would never live in Titusville. I ended up in Titusville. So ended up, I was working for an insulation company. I was traveling out of town, trying to be responsible. But the drinking was still there. And along with the drinking, every time I drink, I just have this overwhelming urge to do cocaine. That's just the way it's always been. And that eventually ended that. I was on probation. I actually opened a restaurant up there. And because I was the manager of the restaurant, I had a key, and I actually went in there and stole the money out of the box to fuel my addiction for that night. The owners found out. The girl at times told them, call his probation officer, because I was on probation at the time. ended up back at the ministry on Range Road, where they moved to. And I was trying to get it together there. I was clean for a couple of weeks. It didn't last long. But I would meet Tony then. So I met Tony on MySpace. So I used to make jewelry. I used to cut raw opal. I learned how to cut opal when I was with the girl in Titusville. I used to sell on eBay and stuff and do things. But I learned how to cut opal and make jewelry. And that was kind of my new addiction. learned how to do that. And I would use MySpace to kind of sell jewelry and stuff. So I came across her profile. I sent her a message, and she saw her other. She sent me a message, and she came out to meet me, and then we started dating. Wasn't bad then, you know. We would stay together. I would stay at her house. Eventually, move in. And I remember a phone call I had, and I don't remember her name, but she was a Christian, and she bought a piece of jewelry off me, and she called me one day about something, and she was saying, "You guys got to get married. You can't live in sin. You can't do that." And I said, "Yeah, you're right." And I called her. She was working somewhere, and I said, "We got to get married. We can't live like this." So we agreed. We got married, and we were gonna have the pastor that was at that ministry marry us originally, but that ministry fell apart. So the pastor was in jail. He had a DUI. The wife was messing around with somebody that came out of prison. It was just a whole mess. The whole ministry just collapsed. Now, they did do a lot of good. They helped people coming out of prison, and they were active for a long time. But, you know, I look back at that, and it was only, you know, that was inevitable that was going to happen. So Tony and I eventually got married. We had a pastor that lives right around the corner from us, and they seemed, because they were married for 30 years and they had a church, you know, we felt that was the best way. And we love them. We see them all the time. We took that great pain to at least have somebody who had a solid marriage and was godly marry us. When we met, you know, Tony's got her own testimony, but, you know, we would talk about religion, we would talk about things, but a lot of times I would make up excuses to listen to certain music, you know, like God created that music, so it sounds good, I can listen to it. Some music is not good for me to listen to. So we got married, and my drinking continued. But my drinking went from every day to where I would go on binges. And it was a really rough time. It was a rough time for her, I know. I would always justify it. Like, you know, I just went out and partied, that's all. I would go to Publix to go get something from Publix, and I wouldn't come home for 2 days, you know. So she got to the point where, you know, she never knew when that other shoe was going to drop. She never knew what I was going to do. I never took her feelings into consideration. I never thought about what she was going through. You know, I was just thinking about what I was going through and what I wanted. There was a time when she came across a place called Dunklin. I'm trying to think if... just prior to that, I would have my first motorcycle accident. So I told myself I would never drink and ride my motorcycle. I went for a ride with another person who went to the church. Now, we did join churches. We did, you know, we went to churches and joined a church in Merritt Island. We joined a church, a smaller church. We thought this church would be better. It's a smaller church. We'll get involved with this church. It's closer to home. Many times I recommitted myself, or listening to Joyce Meyer on the TV and her saying, just say these words. And I would just say those words and nothing changed, nothing. So I made that decision many times, many times. Going to the church in Merritt Island, I would have people pray for me when I was struggling, going through my alcohol and drugs, and the church, the pastor that married us, went and met a couple there that did, I don't know what they did, what was it? Deliverance. So they were trying to deliver me at one point and had their hands on me, and, you know, I didn't feel anything, nothing happened. I felt like I need to get out of here. That's what I felt like. But I was desperate. So I was willing to do anything to stop what I was doing. I wanted to stop what I was doing. So I had my motorcycle accident, and went for a ride with a buddy. Went down US-1, went to the beach to Lou's Blues, which used to be Dragon Lady's Den, which my mom used to hang out at years ago. And went in there and had a shot of tequila. After about three shots, we were leaving, and he was going over 520, and I was going to go straight off into over beach line to Coco, but I turned around and went back to that bar. And the shots of tequila were about that big. I went and had, I don't know, three or four more. I don't remember getting on my motorcycle. I rode in a blackout from Coconuts, couple of miles up the road. I thank God that it was 10 to 7 on a summer evening. There were people on a sidewalk. It was pretty busy traffic. I was traveling at 35 miles an hour. I had a pretty fast bike, so I could get up to speed pretty quick. And I guess I passed somebody, and when I went to pass them, I ended up in the back of another car and ended up under that car. And I don't wear a helmet when I ride. I didn't have a helmet on then. I was pretty banged up, pretty bad, intubated, life flighted to Holmes Regional. Got through that, healed up. For 3 or 4 months, I kept a lie that I didn't drink, because the blood test came back that there was no alcohol in my system. So I, you know, lied to Tony for the longest time, because she rode with me and she knew I was a careful rider, especially when she was on the back of the bike. So she was beyond herself how that happened. And I finally had to confess to her one day. We were working, and I said, I was drinking. I don't know why that didn't show up in my blood, but I was drinking. I rode in a blackout. Marijuana did show up in my bloodstream. So we got through that, and then shortly afterwards, because it was just getting so bad, she found a place called Dunklin Memorial down in Okeechobee. And I was willing to go, had to go down there for an interview. It was a Christian place. They accepted me in. We didn't have the money to pay, but they still accepted us in. It was a strange time. She was having a difficult time, and so was I, because we had to every morning at 7:30, I had to go out by find a place to go and pray to God, and then write down what God was telling me. And I was having a real tough time with this. And I was just having a really hard time. And when she would come visit, she came visit every single weekend. So during the week, I was in the men's side on a weekend, married, and no girlfriends were allowed. You had to be married. They did have some biblical things, but Tony would come every weekend, and they had motels there on the property where the married couples would go stay, and then it would be marriage classes all weekend long, and we would go to church together and all of that. But she was struggling with it too. She was really struggling with that. But I stayed there for 3 months. I got mad one day said, that's it. They wanted me to do something. I didn't want to do it. And called her up. It took probably 200 phone calls because they took me to a gas station and dropped me off. And she told me, I'm not coming to get you. If you leave, I'm not coming to get you. I was very persistent. I've always been persistent, very persistent. And I called and called and called and called and called until she drove to Okeechobee and picked me up. She finally picked me up. 2 weeks later, I'd end up in jail, scratching my head, how did I get here? I took her dad's motorcycle without permission. I would justify that and say that it was in my garage. I had a key in it. You know, but I stole his motorcycle. I took his motorcycle without his permission because I didn't want to take my truck and trailer to go do what I was going to do before she got home. When she came home and I wasn't there, and I had already dumped that bike two or three times, she sent me a text flat out. I'm going to call the sheriff's department. 3 o'clock in the morning, the sheriff's department got me. And I was back in jail with a felony grand theft auto. And with all of my past, you know, that wasn't looking good. Eventually, she bonded me out. It would take, she picked me up, but didn't want me to come home because it would just be a weird situation because my father-in-law lives there on the property. I stole one of his rings, I pawned one of his rings. And then I eventually went and stayed at a friend's ranch and ended up working for her. So Tony and I were still in contact, but then I met somebody. While I was married to Tony, while we were going through that, I got involved with this person for a little while. And got away from it at a point in time. When Tony and I would talk, she said, well, I found this church and I needed my Social Security card. And she said, was that, I'm trying to think, huh? Okay, so that was after I got out. So, okay. So I ended up going to prison for a 22-month sentence for that. I was drinking, doing my drugs with. And I even called her one day and said, look, tell him to get off my bond and put me in prison because I'm going to die out here. And she actually came to get me to do that. And she says, they won't let me do it. They won't let me take your bond off. So I ended up with a 22-month prison sentence. So during that time, I ended up in a place called Lodi, Lancaster. I was at Lancaster. And I came across a pamphlet from Chapel Library. Now, just before I went to prison, I came across a show on TV. It was a preacher's. Now, usually when I see that, I won't even stop to listen. But this was, forgot his name, but it was really sound. He was talking about Matthew, and that was kind of my first little taste of true biblical teaching. And it was, you know, it was kind of, and she sent me a link to this person that I never went and looked at, but I came across it. So anyways, I ended up there, and with that 22-month prison sentence, I came across something from Chapel Library, and I wrote Chapel Library. They sent me some books, sent me some Spurgeon and A.W. Pink and just some books, and I just gobbled them up. I started reading. I just loved it. And I would take those with me when I was released. I ended up at this this place, drug place. He has houses and stuff, heavily into N.A., Narcotics Anonymous and stuff. So I went there. I got a job at a phone place. And I was working there, and I would bring my books with me, and I would read them in between phone calls and stuff. And I did that for the first month or so, and that's when I needed my Social Security card for something. And Tony says, well, I found this church. I've been looking for this church because during my chaos and during my prison stuff and all that, Tony was walking and searching and looking for the truth. So my wife actually brought me to sound biblical teaching, the truth. Because all those times and all those churches, you know, I never heard the gospel. I never heard it. I heard stories with a pastor who never had a Bible in his hand walk the stage and tell a story about what happened in his life and how, you know, taking a little bit of scripture. And I thought that was okay. You know, I mean, you know, at the time I was going through this stuff, I thought that was okay. It made me feel good. The one church was huge. I can get lost in it. You know, it was no big deal. They used to have a worship where it was just music on Wednesday nights. And I remember I went through a little phase where I was smoking pot because it was kept me from drinking. And Tony wanted to go to the worship. And I said, yeah, I'll go. So I would smoke my pot and listen to the loud music. And it was the coolest thing to go. But certainly didn't go there for anything biblical. So she said, well, I'll meet you at this church and give you your Social Security card. And it was Harbor City Baptist. So we met here, and that was the start. That was a start. I knew what the five solas were. First church I ever walked into where I saw those in the church. You know, there's a lot of stuff I'm leaving out, but we'll be here all night. So we met, and then we would meet every Sunday after that. We would meet here at church. She would drive from Cocoa. I was living in Melbourne. And, you know, we were kind of working on a relationship, but then I was, you know, I got involved with somebody else at work. My reading went to the wayside. Any Bible reading that I was doing at the time went to the wayside. The atmosphere that I worked in was just a very worldly atmosphere. And I was just surrounded by it. I'd work double shifts. I was there from 9 o'clock in the morning till 11 o'clock at night, sometimes 6 days a week. So I fell back into all of that stuff. And I just needed one excuse, which was Tony called me in a state attorney because I had an ongoing charge going on with her dad. And she called me and said, the state attorney called and they're trying to send you to prison. So that's all I needed to hear. And that was at 6 o'clock at night. I was at work, and I went, told my boss, I got to leave early, went to downtown Melbourne, went into the bar and started doing shots. So that was the start of that. It didn't last long. I went on a binge. I ended up in Circles of Care. I got out of Circles of Care. I just started a new job in Cocoa because I got laid off from that one. Tony didn't know a lot of the stuff that I was doing. I kept it from her, but we were still meeting here at church. So I was caught in a just a very strange place. So I was trying to save my job. I went to the house. Ended up in the hospital because I had taken a bunch of pills. I just drank and took all these pills that I had at home that I'd gotten for my back. A friend of mine ended up coming out there, getting me, taking me to the hospital. Somebody had to get my motorcycle, but I got out of Circles of Care. And now I'm trying to clean everything up. I'm trying to save my job. I had to go to the hospital to get a note so I could show my job that I was there. And everything was falling in place and okay, and I just left that hospital, pulled into a store, got a couple of Mike's Hard Lemonades, and as a matter of fact, was sitting at the park and was talking to Pastor Jeff on the phone and was supposed to see him the next morning. When I left that park, I got one more, and don't remember getting on my bike, rode from Sarno to Babcock in a blackout along Airport Road. I smashed into two cars there and woke up out of my blackout standing over my motorcycle in front of a car. Not dead. But I knew at that time that was the turning point in my life, because I knew I wasn't mad. I just, it was very strange. I was just at peace. I knew I was going to go to prison. I was on probation. I have a DUI now. I just smashed into two cars. But I didn't care. I didn't care. I knew it was my time to get right with God at that moment. I would go to jail, take care of the DUI, and I just wanted everything done and over with. Sat in jail. Pastor Jeff tried to come see me, and I just missed him because I came back late. They pulled me out for court. That wasn't scheduled. Ended up with a 50-month prison sentence. Ended up at Florida State Prison. So, been to prison before, been through riots, been through all that, but Florida State Prison, and this time and day of age is a whole different beast. So, the last time I went to a place where it wasn't too bad. But this place, there were stabbings all the time. It was very violent. The atmosphere alone, it had such a dark, dark cloud over it. You could feel it. Tony came to visit me, and she could feel it just in the visiting room. And was I scared? Yep. Had a lot of inside fear. But prior to that, I sat at Orlando Reception Center. And I finally got a hold of a Bible, and I would read John, I would read through the Bible, and I said, you know what, I'm going to read through the Psalms, because I never really read the Psalms. So I started reading through the Psalms, and I came across Psalm 51. So I would try not to get emotional, but every time I read Psalm 51, it breaks my heart. So sitting in that cell, it was March, it was cold, the windows were broken, there was plastic hanging, blowing out the windows. How they get away with that was beyond me, but just the whole atmosphere of prison is very, very, it's depressing. You got violence around you. And I sat in that cell, and I came across Psalm 51, and when I read, "Have mercy upon me, O God, according to your loving kindness, according to the multitude of your tender mercies, blot out my transgressions, wash me thoroughly from my iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin. For I acknowledge my transgressions, and my sin is always before me. Against you, you only have I sinned." When I came to that and realized that I've been sinning against God, yeah, I've done bad things to people, but when I realized that I was sinning against God and that I needed to repent, that's when I got a new heart. Because all the churches I went to, everywhere I went, I was baptized. I never repented. Never once repented. I got baptized, walked out of the church, the same person that walked in. I made decisions and walked away from those decisions the same person. So when I finally dropped to my knees in that cell and repented from being a liar, a thief, a murderer, because I had murder on my heart plenty of times. And not jokingly either. I wanted people dead. My stepfather, I wanted dead at a young age. You know, there was people I wished dead. And I repented from those things. My adultery. You know, I got involved in pornography. Whenever I would stop drinking and drugs, I would be attacked at this end. And I don't have that problem. But when I was honest with myself, and until I saw my sin for what it really was, and that all those times I blamed God, you know, God was blameless, absolutely blameless. And, you know, I deserved God's judgment. I deserved God's wrath. You know, his grace and mercy kept me alive. You know, my mother's dead, my father's dead, my stepfather's dead, both of my brothers are dead, and I lived, out of all of them, the most dangerous and irresponsible life you could possibly live. And God had mercy on me. So once I stopped blaming God, and once I saw me for who I was, you know, there was times when we would listen to Joel Osteen, Creflo Dollar, you know, say positive things in the mirror. Why isn't anything changing? You know, if I would have looked in that mirror and really saw me for who I was. But it was all in God's timing. You know, I needed to go through what I went through. God was working on me, but, you know, Pastor Jeff touched on something this morning about rebellion. You know, I just continually rebelled against God. You know, he mentioned that. So that was a change. And then Tony and I, she would come visit. I spent all my time. Now, this prison I was at, and I talked to Dennis about it, people were overdosing all the time. There was a drug there that they were smoking that was bringing them to the brink of death, if not killing them. This was supposed to be a medium secure facility that was faith-based. But there was more drugs and more stuff in this prison than I've ever seen in any prison. And I've never seen this drug that they were doing and what it would go through. So I knew a change took place when I saw somebody that would overdose on this drug, two or three of them at a time, and I would pray for them. I would pray for them. I would talk to people about their salvation. I understood when I talked to people, and I didn't... Something I need to share is when I was in prison before, I didn't want to be seen with a Bible or reading a Bible, because in prison, the ones who went to the church were the child molesters and sex offenders, and that's just the way it was back then when I went to, because they would use the church to go hide and do their deeds. They would hide in the bathroom or do whatever they did. So if you were carrying a Bible in prison, you were labeled. At this point, I didn't care about any labeling, you know. In the midst of all that chaos, I knew that I could go to Jesus, and I felt that peace. I could sit on my bunk and all this chaos going around me and be in God's word. That's what kept me going through this time. I don't know how else to explain it. It was just, I just knew that I could be with Jesus and I didn't need to be. I could just go away in the word and be there. But it was just a lot of stuff going on. Tony and I were talking. We were reconciling. God was reconciling us. We weren't doing anything. She was worried about her dad, what her dad was going to think. And I would tell her, look, we just pray about it. Let God deal with that. you know? And she was really fretting about it, and I understand. I did a lot of damage to him. We had a good relationship. We would remarry. She'd come to visit all the time. We would remarry. She came to pick me up. I wasn't really concerned about her dad. She still was. She was concerned about me because of the past. I knew that there would be some time where she would have apprehension, she'd have nervousness, she would go through her thing because, you know, she spent her marriage with me where she didn't know where I was going to be at, what I was going to do. So after a few months, her dad finally, I don't even know how it happened, but I'll tell you this. Today, her dad and I have the best relationship. That relationship has been fully restored, better than it was before. You know, I love making him dinner. I spend time with him. I talk to him. I had to take him to the hospital the other day. He didn't have to worry about me leaving him at the hospital and not coming back to get him. I stay there with him the whole time. My wife today doesn't worry about if I go to Melbourne from Cocoa or go on a photo shoot somewhere. She doesn't worry that I'm not going to come home today. I don't think about going anywhere else but taking care of my business, and I want to come home. I want to come home to my wife. Now, we have our struggles. We have our struggles, but, you know, she's God's gift to me. I love her very much. We're blessed with our church family. I'm blessed with a new life, and it's nothing that I have done to get to where I'm at today. It's only because of God and what he's done for me. I fall short daily. I fall short on my prayer, on my reading, but I'm convicted about it, and that's the good thing, you know, because before I had no conviction about anything. If I talk wrong to my wife, I'm convicted about it. I have brothers and sisters in my life who I can call and talk to. I hear from our pastor almost daily, you know, almost daily. And I'm just in a blessed place right now. We have a blessed life. We have changes going on with our business. Tony's going to start working at home, and then if it's God's will, I'm hoping to open a food truck next year. That's our plan, and that's the direction that we're going in. And we could never do any of these things, you know, without God. And we're just blessed beyond measure with our family, our church family, our family. I pray for our families. I pray for our unsaved families. We just had to go through a death with her sister. When my family died, I used to wonder where they're at. And I used to make excuses. But I had to come to the hard reality that my brother, both of my brothers, my mother, they died in their sins. And I don't know that at that moment they accepted Jesus. But I do know that prior to that, they didn't. So I have to accept that reality, that I may not see them, and that's a reality. But that makes me want to let somebody else know to make sure that they don't have to live that reality. Now, salvation is really, really deep on my heart, personal salvation today, where I didn't care before. And even abortion, you know, I didn't care about abortion before, never thought about it, but the killing of unborn babies is heavy on my heart today, you know, and that's God. That's not me. That's not something that I just decided to do. So I will close with this, and I certainly hope that this made sense. I am not what I ought to be. I am not what I want to be. I am not what I hope to be in another world, but I am not what I used to be. I, by the grace of God, I am what I am. That's from John Newton. This hangs in my office by my desk. And I see that every day. And that's it.